We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/AcrossAmerica.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Hi, and welcome to this episode of Out of the Cave. I'm Pete George, and today we are joined by a gentleman called Mark Ross. Now, Marcus has had a different journey to me, but we all have a journey. And Marcus's journey has led him to be a counsellor and specialise in separation, which at least 50% of us will go through. But there's also different types of separation, in the sense of separation from work, separation from sports. But we'll get Mark to tell us his story, and then we'll talk about separation as well. Welcome to the show, Marcus.
Excellent. Thanks for having me on, Pete.
My pleasure. So how did Marcus get to where Marcus is today?
Yeah, okay. So I try to summarise this, obviously, best I can. So, I grew up on a family farm in country Victoria, near Avoca, actually.
Okay.
On 1,000 acres. So we had cropping, we had sheep and cattle were the main. Yep. Things, and my dad was a farmer, so grew up there, and up until I was 17 years of age, that's when I got up to the end of year 11, and I saw a lot of my school friends going out and making money, earning the dollars, and even though a couple of my teachers encouraged me to sort of go on and maybe do university and some further studies. I think particularly my business teacher, thought that a university would have been a good fit for me, but I ended up finishing year 11. And then I actually end up doing a pre-apprenticeship in motor mechanics, believe it or not.
And that's a big difference. Well, I suppose when you look at it on the farm, you got to pick it up anyway, aren't you?
I suppose we did bits and pieces of mechanical stuff, I guess, with the machinery and stuff, but nothing too in depth. I actually moved to Ballarat, which was probably an hour away, I guess, from where. Yep. where I grew up. Moved down there and started the pre-apprenticeship course, which was like a TAFE type. Yep. Course at the time. I ended up in towards the end of that course, before it had actually finished, like it was a 1 year course. It got,
yep,
got probably three quarters of the way through that, and had a call from a group training company in the area in Ballarat, called me up and said, "Oh, I've got an opening at a car dealership in spare parts." And at that time, I was planning to go down the like the mechanic route, but I thought, well, this is opportunity to get a foot in the door to automotive, and I can always sort of move around and look at different opportunities once I once I sort of get a go. So I felt like it was good, just to put myself forward, just to get some experience in the work, in the working arena. So, I accepted that, and done traineeship in warehousing, I think it was called at the time, actually. Done that, and then ended up continuing on, and done spent most of my career, actually, up until a couple of years ago, in automotive retail type work. Predominantly around parts and like warehousing, transport, all those kinds of things. So, basically, what happened is I feel like obviously growing up, there was some things that I didn't get, realization of until later on in life. So basically where all this led to is early 2020, I went through a family separation myself.
Yeah.
So, but it wasn't until I came up to that point where I really, gained awareness of quite a few things and quite a few different sort of patterns and habits that I sort of got into that, weren't really serving me, so I've got to the point at that stage, I actually done a social media post around this recently, and it was a number of things that occurred at this one point, which I guess for me, that was a defining moment, and that was a turning point. That was a turning point for me.
I'll just step back to Avoca, right, because I grew up in Melton. And when we first moved to Melton, there was only about 2,500 people in Melton. So that was in the early 70s. And just for the listeners, Avoca is smaller than that but has grown over the years to a mid-sized country town. So roughly how many people are in Avoca?
To be honest, I wouldn't be 100% sure now. Probably maybe there's around 800 to 1,000 people there back in the day when I was growing up. It's probably a bit bigger again now. But I was like roughly 15 minutes drive from Avoca. We were out in the country, so we just had we were sort of not a huge, like we were 5 minute drive to the nearest neighbour kind of thing. So not isolated, but we were sort of had plenty of open space and fresh air around us. So
because when you go down your story, it's got to come into a similar pattern as to me growing up in a smallish town. So it's got to be quite interesting from here. So 2020, I think, seemed to be a huge turning point for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think March, it was around March 2020. It was actually right at the start of COVID, I believe. It was, it was at the very start of, we were about to go into, lockdowns and things like that, I believe. So it was a challenging time, I guess, for a lot of people. But, for me, it was that time. And like I said, there was a few things that sort of all corresponded together.
And snowballed up into
that. Which meant like things like obviously, like there was obviously that the separation which I went through, but there was also just in general, you know, things were not good for me. Like my life was not good in the way that even like, you know, like financially things were not good. I actually got to the point where I actually went over on demerit points with my license. So actually, I actually lost my license for a period of time as well.
Yep.
So, you know, there were a number of things that and it wasn't really until that point where I sort of really, I guess that the pain of that, I guess, caused me to really think long and hard about where I was and what were some of the decisions that I had made, you know, that had ended up to this point. Another part of it is like not just, you know, not just my relationship with my ex-partner, but my relationship with everybody, relationships with everybody around me, family and friends included, you know, were not good because my communication was not good, you know, in relating to other people around me and just building positive relationships with people. So that was where I was, but they're not obviously that caused me to have to reassess.
So where
was I and what did I actually want, if that makes sense?
Yeah. So what were some of those behaviours? Because generally the more and more I've got involved. To give you a little bit of a background, I started out of the cave probably 3-4 years ago when I shouldn't have. Mentally, I knew I was suffering from depression, anxiety and all of those wonderful things. I had a lot of injuries and stuff like that, but I shouldn't have started then because I didn't know who I was until I ended up in the mental health unit. But there's a lot of common sort of things that come forward, and what were those things that you picked up that you did to family, friends, unconsciously until you got to the point where, yeah, the demerit points and all of that, and you realised, okay, there's something got to change here.
True, and probably another thing I can throw in there as well is the feeling of, like you just spoke about, basically purpose, really, like, being unfulfilled and not having that sort of clear purpose or idea of where you actually want to be or what you're working towards. So yeah, some of the things. Well, what I noticed, obviously, from ending up in that place, due to myself, of course. but you know, there are a few things that come up around that, and obviously, it caused me to think about all this stuff. And I guess one thing that came up was, which I didn't actually realise at the time until I took a step away from the situation and realised, you know, what was going on, what might have affected some of these things. So one thing I can specifically remember is, like obviously mentioned before about growing up out in the country, used to go out and about and, you know, help my dad out with different bits and pieces around the farm and jobs and different things. Yep. And one thing was that, and I want to put this in context as well, like I was super close to my dad and, you know, we had a great relationship and he actually got me involved in, junior football, which ended up great for me. I started off in the mini league when I was about 3 years old and, you know, running around at half time. And I ended up, we ended up winning a junior premiership later on, you know, when I went up to sort of under 16s. So, which, you know, that whole social part of it that comes with playing country footy too was just amazing. So I'm so grateful for Dad for getting me involved in all that. But yeah, aside from that, like I say, I followed him around everywhere, was very close to him, everything like that. But one thing that I guess did affect me and I didn't realise it till later on is, say I was maybe 6 years old, something like that, I'd be out sort of helping out Dad. Now, Dad was not the best at managing his emotions. So, you know, he'd be doing a particular job, say mechanical job. You know, you get frustrated with it, and you know, you end up sort of cursing a bit and throwing the odd tool around. Never directed at a person or anything, but I suppose there was that. And then, you know, it was you know, at times, like Mum and Dad were both very strong, you know, very strong minded people. And so, you know, at times, you know, things were pretty, just strong, just two strong people with strong opinions and, you know, butting heads and things like that. Nothing, obviously, nothing sort of abusive or anything like that. But it's, I suppose, as a kid at that age, you know, you like seeing some of that stuff, it sort of does, I suppose, you know, affect you in a way. So, yeah, there's sort of that. And then, you know, I've actually been married twice now. So, I actually went through, like a separation back in 2011, I believe it was, as well.
Okay. Yep.
Which was just 2011 was pretty major for me. In March, unfortunately, we lost Dad in a tragic vehicle accident. Which was big shock to everyone. Obviously, like he was in his 60s, but he was still had plenty of life left in him, we thought. So yeah, that was unfortunate. And then sort of later on that same year, my son was born.
Yep.
And then I think it was late 2011 or maybe early 2012. Like my son, I think it was like less than 6 months old. And you know, when I separated the first time. So within that 12-month period, you know, I lost my dad, I had my son born, and went through separation altogether. So that was very hectic time of my life, you could say. But
So it's the loss, win, loss, and it's they accumulate over time, losses, and they do you in.
Yeah, and I guess it was disappointing for me too, because I would have loved, you know, my dad to be able to obviously meet my son as well, and you know, that fortunately wasn't to be. So so anyway, there was that, and I suppose not really, I think did do one or two sessions of counseling at the time after we lost Dad, but didn't really talk about it much with anyone. Didn't really sort of process it or deal with it properly at the time, I don't believe. Just sort of pushed it under the carpet.
Yeah, and that's that to me is the country mentality. You know, like there's, you know, I can remember instances, one of them's quite famous, and Bernie Williams, he was killed out in the back end of Tulan Vale and things like that, and, you know, the town wasn't sort of allowed to talk about it. It was all hush hush and things like that. And then a mate at school, his family got killed in a car accident. And I was at a primary school, and then that was all sort of, you sort of say, you know, hi and everything like that, but you weren't allowed to actually physically show anything towards the people. And that was a hard thing. And that's sort of gets instilled in the country psyche, I think. In the city, because I've lived in the country and I've lived in the city, and the mix is totally different, whereas they all talk about everybody knows everything, whereas everybody knows everything in the bush but never says anything.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So I think what happened actually is, you know, obviously, I guess, you know, having that, I was like, Dad was a role model to me, and wasn't the best, like I said, at handling emotions. And I, you know, I'm sure I picked up I picked up some of those, you know, some of those sort of habits and behaviors myself. And so it's sort of not dealing with, you know, some of that other stuff too, like, you know, dad's death in 2011, probably the earlier separation. And then I suppose it ended up at the point where, which culminated, you know, back in early 2020, like I say, but at that time, it ended up in me, I guess, just being, you know, I was unfulfilled, but I'd sort of ended up turning into a bit of an angry person, you know. I was, even if I wasn't always saying it, people would pick up that, I had that, a bit of a frustrated, you know, demeanor about me and I just looked, I guess maybe looked frustrated or looked angry because I wasn't really, I wasn't really happy, but it was more to do with the fact I was feeling unfulfilled because I didn't know where I was going. I was just sort of, you know, felt like I was running on the hamster wheel, but I didn't actually have that sort of clear purpose of where I wanted to be. So, I guess a couple of the questions that I sort of asked myself at that time when I was reassessing where I wanted to be, I sort of, a couple of questions were sort of, where did I want to be in 5 years' time? Yeah. And what sort of values did I want to show? You know, what kind of man did I want to be? And so that's where I sort of, by getting clear on some of those sort of, you know, core values that were important to me and what kind of person I wanted to be with the people around me and what kind of example I wanted to show to my kids, two kids, a son and a daughter, three-year-old daughter and 11-year-old son. So, that was sort of, and then I suppose for the next 2 or 3 months was really just, well, people say, probably not, probably rediscovering myself, I guess, because I hear.
So
I hear
what was, what was the spark that made you question yourself? What got you to that point where you said, okay, there's something not right here? And then
I think the prompt was just the fact that I was where I was, and it was quite obvious that, you know, I wasn't in a good place in a lot of ways as I sort of gone forward, culminating in a few different areas of my life. But I don't know, I think it was just, it was really, because obviously, breakups and separations are difficult. And it was probably really like the pain of that separation and the feelings that come up originally, which were all around, you know, I've failed as a man, you know, because my marriage has failed, so I've failed, you know. And I think that's a very common thought amongst men. Once they go through that thing, the first thing they do is, you know, negative self-talk and the self-criticism of them, you know, what they could have done differently. You know, it all, they sort of bring a lot of it back onto themselves, which in my case was a good thing because I needed to have a look at that, you know, and there was some things that I needed to do differently and some things that I needed to adjust so that I could, you know, become a better version of myself. So,
One of the things that, I was in the mental health unit that, you know, at 55, the old light bells went off and got me back on track. But I think one of the things that, it'd be good to get your opinion on this bit, is that men have got to stop thinking about themselves as men, the macho man. That's one of the reasons why I've called it Out of the Cave. If you take the men out of the argument and call yourself a person, you know, like a vulnerable person or not a vulnerable man, then it sort of, it's a little bit softer and a little bit more to understand and take in. Because when we, as men, there's this expectation that we're strong, we've got to be there for everybody, we don't cry in public and all of that kind of stuff. It's slowly changing, but I just think if we can see ourselves as a person first and then what our role as the person in the chain, I just think that it helps. And I think you found that as well, you know, who am I as a man? But really, I think it was who you are as a person and where do you fit in, and I've done this right, that wrong. But as you said, most men will just line it up with wrong, 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 wrong all the way along, and they don't see the good, and that's what happened to me. But I just think if we see ourselves as a person first, that's just...
Absolutely, yeah, I agree with that. But I think it's probably what sort of mindset or attitude do you have you got at the time, you know, when you're in some of these bad places, you know, in challenging situations. And it's like, well, a lot of the time we're more probably in like victim mindset, I guess a lot of people would describe it as, rather than how can I learn and grow? How can I sort of learn and grow from this? Like, what is this trying to show me? Because what I found is obviously going through the separation twice, there was things from the first time that I didn't take on as, you know, things that I could have done better. And I didn't really take any of that on. It was all just, I just, you know, put it down to a bad choice. And, you know, what a lot of the time, you know, when people break up, they'll just sort of defer the blame to another, you know, to another person, or to their ex-partner or whatever it might be. But it's all about taking accountability and responsibility for, okay, well, there's two people involved in this relationship, but where do I, you know, where do I fit in all that, and what could I have done differently? And you know, in that situation, because it's just, I suppose, it's looking at things from a different through a different lens, I guess. Because you're looking for the opportunities to grow and learn, rather than sort of complaining and whining and, you know, moaning about and blaming other people around us.
Yeah, it's quite funny. I was they put out a post, and I just replied and I said, "Well, I went and found four miserable people, and I became the fifth." So you always, as I said the other night, you find what you're looking for.
And a lot of it, I think, is who you surround yourself with as well.
Yeah. So, but yeah, it's, you know, like I go back to my separation, and I was happy. You know, there was something not right there, and bang, you know, we both came to the same agreement. There was no kids that involved. That'd make it a bit harder, but it was just, okay. But then I realised probably 2 years after the separation that, I could have done a fair bit better than I could have. So the video I did today, the vulnerability one, it popped up because, and it was purely because of the person that who it was. Do you know Simon Sinek?
Yep.
Yeah. Would you ever pick him to go through a big bout of depression? No.
No, not at all.
And he did. He did through COVID, and that's what the vulnerability is. So everybody at some point in time is going to feel bad. And, it, you know, whether it's a loss through separation or just in general. But it's identifying, like what you did, you identified that, hey, there's some mistakes here. And then being strong enough to try to rectify those mistakes. And I think that's where you are now. So one of the big things that you do is you on the, I'll call it a journey. I don't know what you'll call it, but you're on a journey to assist others to understand this. And what got you to Men's Elevate Counselling? What in Simon Sinek's turn, what was your why to do that?
Yeah, so I guess it was around that, probably within that sort of 3 month period,
yep,
of the separation, that was where a lot of soul searching and a lot of thinking was done about,
yep,
you know, and asking myself those questions that I mentioned before. And so I guess, and I was looking at things like, what would my life look like in the ideal scenario? And so I was looking at, obviously, the first thing was that I wanted to really be able to use, you know, my own experiences to help other men on that, you know, who might be experiencing separation and, you know, around that challenging time for them. So that was really the main, the main core of it. But I guess as I mentioned before, how I'd been in that sort of automotive retail space for over 20 years, yeah, and I was wasn't fulfilled, feeling a bit stale, I guess, in that, you know, in that area. I'd thought about doing something, different for quite a while, yep, as far as a different field of work, but procrastinating was a bit of a habit of mine. So I'd sort of talk about some ideas, but I never actually sort of pulled the trigger on anything. So
yep.
But yeah, I guess it was, it was at that, after that separation, then it was like, you know, that's really, sprung me into action, I guess. I knew I needed to do something different because, you know, life in general was just not working for me, not where I wanted to be. So that was, it was mainly about really just being passionate about helping other men on that journey and being able to use my own experience to do that. And so I suppose I started to make a few inquiries about, you know, different options and opportunities of how I could do that. And, yep, getting into mental health, like men's mental health, that was, you know, that felt like a good fit for me. Yep. So I jumped into the books, jumped into study, and I was actually doing my, still doing my full-time retail job, and I just sort of, done the study part-time around yep, that. And then once it got to the point of, finishing that, I'd always actually planned on having my own. I've always been had a bit of an entrepreneurial side to me.
yep.
When I was really young, this is really funny, but when I was really young, I done up a flyer and I pretended that I had my own cafe at mum and dad's house. And yep, this is 50 cents and this is a dollar.
Yep.
I created my own business within the house, and I tried to charge my mum and dad and my sister, you know, money for this cafe. So
yep,
I suppose always in the back of my mind, I always had this idea that I'd like to start a business, and I'd never done it. So when I started studying counselling, I always had that idea that at the end, I'd like to go into my own practice, like my own business. So that was always a plan. And then, yeah, when I got to, I was actually end of August last year when I finished up the course. And then I'd sort of done a few things earlier than that so that I could sort of hit the ground running a little bit. Like I'd already gotten on social media and different things and just tried to, get a little bit of awareness that, that I was coming. And, so I started that up. But the same again, once I started the business, it was, I still had my full-time retail position, and I just started the business sort of part-time on the side. Similar to what I was doing when I was studying. Yep. And then I think sort of got up to around March, April this year, and I've now sort of moving more into the business as well as like continuing my studies as well in the counselling field. So so it was really around that, but like there was a couple of other things I suppose that came into it. I wanted to do something where my schedule was, could be a little bit flexible and I could sort of set my hours I'm available and things like that. Obviously having the two kids, like family is important to me. So that was, I guess, it was really just an added byproduct or bonus of the fact of, the reason is the passion I have, but the, having your own business whilst there's a lot involved with it, it does, there is the option to give you that little bit of extra, flexibility in how you run it, I guess.
Yeah. So on the separation side of things, I know I mentioned earlier that I see that there's different silos of separation, but your main focus is on home separation, so breakdowns in marriages and things like that. As a bloke listening to this, wherever you may be, what are the keys you see to, because one of the things I see is that us blokes are a little bit vulnerable to put a hand up to get help. And I got to try to do this with my GP, where I'll get him on here and talk about how the process works. So how does the process work with you as a counsellor to make everybody feel like they're doing the right thing? Because that's the hardest thing. I've tried to go through psychologists and stuff like that, and I just get this mental block that they're just trying to silo me. So where does Marcus get it a little bit different to your stock standard sort of what people perceive as counselling is?
Yeah, so there's a fair bit to that actually. So I guess there's a part of it around when you first mentioned obviously about men actually reaching out, I suppose, feeling comfortable in actually recognizing that, maybe there's some things that, could be improved or some challenges or problems that they may have in their life that they may need some help with. Yeah. And I suppose the second part is actually, which I think is actually like a brave and courageous thing to do, is actually step forward and seek that help. But unfortunately, like you said before, there's still a lot of work to do in that area as far as, encouraging men to seek that help, and when they need it, because I feel like I put out a few social media posts actually recently, and it's a big problem. There's a lot of men that feel that they will be judged or criticised or ostracised for, you know, for actually sharing their feelings and sharing what's going on for them, sharing their challenges. So that's a big thing. But I suppose that's just the first part of it. What I do is I help men experiencing separation. I help them to take control of their lives, rediscover their purpose, and build confidence to be the man they know they can be.
Yep.
And in doing this, I do have a particular framework that I work with, which I call my EPIC strategy, which is actually based on a lot of the steps that I personally took myself. So I can go that through that with you now if you like, and that's the that will give a fair bit of a picture of my journey and what I found helped me to.
Yeah, that'd be great if you could do that, because then you know that if some, as I said earlier, my why is that if we can help one bloke step forward, I've done some good in the world. And you know, this might be a message that gets someone to say, okay, well, yep, let's get in contact with Marcus.
Yeah for sure. Yeah, it's all about we've got to keep encouraging this, and definitely, yeah, you know, men need to seek help when they need it, for sure. But sometimes they may not actually you know, have that awareness of the situation, or that they actually may need some help either. But the strategy that I use is basically so I talk about it's the EPIC strategy, and what I talk about is starting off with emotions. So emotions for me, I think a lot of men in that specific moment, when this is all happening, and obviously there's a lot of different circumstances and ways that this can happen, but I think it's actually been found that probably 70% of the time or more, it is the female who initiates a separation.
Yeah.
So it is, you know, most of the time it is the female that initiates. And I guess what I personally didn't handle very well in that situation was when my ex-partner actually let me know that she wanted to separate, and so that's why I suppose that's why emotions is the first thing for me, because I suppose myself, I feel like I made the situation probably 10 times worse than what it could have been if I had just kept my cool. There was no, there was nothing physical or anything like that, but I, you know, I raised my voice. I yelled, you know, I was not, you know, we had just actually relocated, 2 hours away from where we were living, to what I thought was, you know, that we were sort of setting up for a new, you know, for a new chapter together. And we'd only moved like a month prior. So I was frustrated. And I let that, you know, I unfortunately let that spill over, and I said some things that I shouldn't have said, and I yelled. Emotions.
Yeah, that's a big one. Like I can remember when I went through the separation, I was home from work. If you'd ever look closely at my face, it's playing up something shocking today. I suffered bad from eczema. And I was home from work, and I rung up the ex-wife, and she was chatting, and all of a sudden, out of the blue, I said, "You don't want to be in this marriage, do you?" And she said, "No." On the phone, I thought, well, okay, well, there's something not right here, so okay, let's go. But I did get angry. Not straight away, but I did get angry with it. And I think that, as you said, could have made it a lot easier overall if I didn't.
Yeah, well, I think as men too, we attach, we get quite attached to the relationship and to the marriage. So it's, and sometimes even, there'll be interests or hobbies that we may have ourselves.
Yep.
And quite often, with family and partner and everything else, we're not really engaging in those hobbies maybe as much as we might have, we might have otherwise done those things. And so I suppose our life becomes a lot more about, the family and the kids and everything else. And I'm not saying that that's a bad thing, but I guess it's having that, that balance of, you still need to be doing things, looking after yourself and doing things for yourself, because by doing those things, you're going to be a better partner, you're going to be a better father, and just a better person in general, So,
because you come together and become a couple, but you're always an individual before you start it. And I think losing that individualism is wrong. That's just my view. You've still got to have your own hobbies and things like that, as long as there's give and take. But yeah, that was one thing I've worked out.
It's our identity, isn't it? Like we sometimes we can get stuck with making our identity about the marriage and about our family, but we've got our own identity, which is separate from that. Not to say that one thing is more important than the other, but we've got our own identity, which is important that we are true to that as well.
I always think of the movie Stand By Me, with River Phoenix and all of those kids in it, Will Wheaton. And at the end, when the Richard Dreyfuss is typing away and he's finishing his book, and he says, "You never have friends like you did when you were 10. And it's true, I just think that we lose sight of that friendship when we go into a relationship. Not by want or need or anything like that. It's just the way it evolves and can evolve. Yep. So, it's a good point that you brought up.
Well, naturally you feel a loss because obviously you feel the loss of that, that relationship really, and everything that sort of goes with that. But I suppose the other thing as a man that you're also adjusting to and feeling the loss of is possibly time and continuing the relationships that you want to have with your kids also, because that's another big part of the picture. Is obviously the relationship's finished, but I think for me as well, what came up was a lot of fear around the uncertainty, of, okay, so what's going to happen? Am I going to be able to see my daughter? And when and where am I going to be able to see my daughter? Because you don't want to lose that relationship either. You want to have good relationships I did anyway. I wanted to have good relationships with my kids as well, of course.
That's one thing I'll never comment on or never voice an opinion. I've never had children. And I can't imagine, there's two things I can't imagine, the loss of a child and the separation from a child, where you can't, you know, there's instances and there's blokes that I've met over the time where the way the courts have worked and everything, they don't even have access to their kids anymore. And that must hurt, whether it's good, bad or indifferent, the type of person they are, you know, it's still their child, which is, it must be scary.
Yeah, actually, there's another guy that works in similar field to me. His name's actually, he's actually the divorce cowboy, and he does it. You know, obviously works with similar, you know, men to what I do. And there was a post recently around that, and I actually feel like I can understand with really young kids, they take into account obviously the, you know, the attachment side of things. Obviously, you know, if the child is you know, like breastfeeding and things like that. They obviously take that into account, which I understand, that's, you know, that's fair and reasonable. But I think it seems to be, because most of the time the natural thing is that, you know, the kids stay with the mum, and then whatever happens with the living arrangements or whatever, you know, whether the dad moves out or the mum and the kids move out, whatever that might be, more often than not, you know, the kids tend to be with the mum. And then it's the process from there is that the man needs to, you know, follow the legal processes, you know, to pursue better if they're not happy with the, you know, the contact and the time that they're getting with their kids. You know, I think that the whole process and the legal side of things, obviously it's different what parents can do, depending on, you know, their work and everything else. But I think it would be more reasonable if automatically they just set a 50-50, 50-50 type arrangement. And then if that wasn't practical, then, you know, go through the course of mediation or legal, whatever that might be, you know, to work out something that does work. But I think that automatic default, it should really just be an automatic default at 50-50. Because unfortunately, I think as it currently is, it seems to me more like a sort of 70 to 80%. You know, kids with the mum, and then the onus is on the dad to, you know, follow that process, go through the mediation, the courts, and everything else, and the time involved to do that. Quite often, you know, there's 6-12 months down the track, and they're still going through the legal system. So they're also losing that time with their kids. All while this is going on, they're not getting that time with their kids as well. So,
it's a real tough topic, that one. I follow a couple of social sites and some of the, you know, the things the guys are saying, and they go through, it's, you know, horrendous for them, but how hard is it for the kids? That's where I sort of come from too. You know,
it's all about making that transition easier for them. And obviously, pending, obviously, the, you know, the health and safety, there's no danger to the health and safety of the kids, of course. That's obviously different, you know, that's obviously a different story if there's violence and things like that involved. But, you know, that's not what I'm referring to there. So
I totally agree. You know, like if you go in 50-50, you should come out at 50-50 and then work back from there, you know, like. But if, as you said, like if there's, you know, the male or the man's been abusive or hasn't been good to the kids and things like that, yeah, no chance. But if it's just, like you take my parents after 32 years, they separated, they just grew apart. And now if that's the case, that's where it should start at 50-50. Very good point, young man.
So that was the first part of it. We got a bit I got a bit sidetracked there, but emotions. That's all right. Yeah. So that is obviously when we're talking about emotions, we're talking about making decisions based on logic rather than emotions. Because that's obviously, as we've spoken about just before, that's obviously where things can go. Things can go bad, and not going to result in the outcomes that we would like. We've got that. The P is for purpose, which I know we've briefly spoken about. The process, I guess, that I went through, which is mainly just, I think it was just asking myself those important questions and just the reflection of where I am today and where would I like to be. That was sort of, that was the main part of it. And what steps can I take to get me from where I am today to where I'd like to be?
Yeah, the purpose side of things was the same as me. That's what sparked me off in the mental health unit. Occupational therapist? I think that's what a title was. And I think we said this when I had the telephone call with you, and I've said it on some other shows, but she drew the circle with my name in the middle and then asked, you know, who I was, and I wasn't too pleasant to myself. And she said, well, what's got you to that mindset? And I said, pain. And then we worked out all the different facets to Peter George, and then the old brain went, yep, and I understood where I was in the bigger scheme of things. So, the purpose is a big one, I think, which is cool.
Yeah, and we go through, with my clients, we go through the process, and the process starts with defining out like what your core values are. And once we know that, then as well as asking ourselves, what are the what sort of things are we passionate about, what sort of things do we enjoy, and then we can sort of bring all that together to come up with a clear purpose and a clear plan on how to get there.
Yeah. That's the big one, another interview I did with Colin, he went through the same thing. He was addicted to drugs and alcohol and then eventually found his purpose. He went from Scotland to Alice Springs, but he found it, but he got there in the end. Yeah.
I think it's always there. It's just like, that's why I like the word rediscovering. Because you don't actually lose it. You just lose sight of it, or you lose clarity around, what that purpose is for you. But I feel like it's always there. It's just you've got to maybe uncover it, is it that you want? Maybe it's just not clear. It's a bit foggy for you at the moment. But
yeah. Hmm. And then the next one I'd assume is going to be the I.
Yeah, so I, so we're talking about influencing how we can influence other people around us, because I think we actually, we don't actually give full awareness or full weight to the fact of how much we can actually influence the people around us. Because we, as we know, There's things we can control and things that we can't control. And we can't control other people's reactions or what they might do, but we can control like what we do and how we show up and how we communicate. So, and if we are stepping up and, you know, being the man that we want to be in line with our core beliefs and our values, then, you know, we can actually positively affect a lot of people around us. I think that we diminish, you know, we sometimes can diminish that a little bit, but we do actually have, you know, a huge power in that way. So, yeah, it's really just around how we communicate, how we show up, what are our actions. So if we're stepping up and being a leader, then the people around us, you know, will notice that. And quite often their views and mindset around things will change as well as our, you know, if we have the positive mindset towards it, then quite often that will change. That can change their attitudes and mindsets around it as well.
Yeah, because one of the things that Jane, that's my wife, she is starting to talk about how I was a bit more. She's now realised that I'm not the person that I was prior to Christmas. I've come a fair way. But she said it was just like I had to walk around on eggshells all the time because, you know, she didn't know what was going to be straight. Not, you know, whether I was going to be snappy or whether I was going to be, you know, as you said, people would see your face and they'd know, well, he's not happy. Yeah. Well, how he's going to be today? Is he going to do this? Is he going to do that? And I think that's, once you identify that, I think out of all of them, I think that's the big one. If you know that you influence people for good or for bad, then, you know, like, it was funny. I was at the people that look after me trying to find work for me, and they said, "Oh, you've got no referees." And I said, "No, I don't have any referees. You've got to have someone in your phone." I said, "I've got three people in my phone." That's how many people I pushed away.
Yeah.
With over a 7-year period with a bad attitude.
Yeah.
So to now realise that, okay, I can influence people like you're doing now through Men's Elevate Counselling. You know, you've realised that you can help people in other ways. Like I'm studying mental health peer-to-peer so I can work just with other people. But once you realise that and that, you, as you said, you can have your core values, align them to how you want to be seen by people, then I think the world will be heaps better.
Absolutely, yep. And the other thing about that is, like what we were chatting about, how other people, you know, perceiving or seeing us as, you know, as angry person. Well, like we can't see what we, you know, what we look like, what we look like to other people or how other people see us. So it's really interesting. Like I didn't know that I was coming across the way that I was, but after getting feedback from others around me, you know, I was able to get a better idea of what the true picture was and where the opportunities were there for me, you know, to learn and grow and communicate better.
Yeah, yeah. That's cool. And then we got the big C, and it's not for cancer.
Yeah, big C, yeah. Yeah, so this is actually, so we were coming up with this, strategy, and we were trying to obviously put together a word, and it was, you know, it was a bit of a challenge actually. Yep. Trying to put together a word that matches with what I was trying to, you know, get across and what I was trying to embody with this strategy. And so we got to the C and we were sort of, we were finding it hard, you know, to come up with something. And we, I wanted it to be around like mindset, our mindset or our attitude towards different situations and the challenges that we faced. And so, you know, we had a look at some different words and what they mean. And so we come up with credo. So credo is basically has that same meaning around a similar meaning to you know, to mindset. So that's what we came that's what we've done there. And yeah, I think even at the very start, it's probably almost up there, just as important as obviously as managing our emotions, because we give the situation a certain narrative and a certain story.
Yep,
that's what actually affects how we think about it. You know, like if we're seeing things in a negative way or through a negative lens, then that affects, you know, everything that we think about it, our responses to it, everything. If we can, you know, change the way that we, you know, our story or our narrative around that particular situation, then we can, you know, the whole thing can be more positive. The whole process. We're not reacting. We're actually responding to things.
Yep.
And we're responding to things to situations in the best way that we can.
Yeah, it's. I suppose women go through the same thing too. But when the men's expectation is to where it's fight or flight, I suppose is the best way. That's how what we're taught. And most of the time we're taught to fight back, because that's deep in our DNA as hunters, gatherers and all that kind of stuff. But to actually be able to step back and assess a situation with a clear head, I think that to me is a trick in itself.
And I think on that front, like that's where our thoughts are so important, because like that's where everything starts really, is with our thoughts that come in and what I've learned through the whole cognitive behavioral therapy, which is one of the approaches that I use a lot, is around challenging and questioning our thoughts as they come up. So that's what I feel can be really powerful, because quite often we'll come to an assumption, or we'll come to a conclusion, or we'll say a negative thing about a particular situation or a challenge. But it's when we actually, challenge ourselves to actually question it and realize that a thought is not a fact. A thought is just a thought, you know, and a thought can come and a thought can go. And we don't need to attach ourselves to it. So I think that's something that was really powerful for me. And I actually, back probably within towards the end of 2020, I actually came across a mentor that actually, she was just amazing. And I was actually on one of her events the other night, and I was letting everybody know how much, you know, how much she had changed, you know, my life and going forward. And she taught me that we actually control our thought. We can actually control our thoughts. And prior to that, I just thought that, you know, everything that was happening was external, and I had no control. But when we bring it back to concentrating on, you know, our own internal thoughts and how we, you know, how we're responding to different situations, we really have a lot more power than what we might think.
Yep. Yeah. So it's the good thing about it is, you know, like it's a journey that you take people on. And, you know, there's a start and there's an end. And that's the beauty of it all, I think. And especially dealing with separation. I think that's, you know, you started as in a marriage, that ended. So now you've got to go on the journey to understand how to get yourself through that and then get yourself to be a better person. Because it's, you know, not just, as you said earlier, it's not just your ex-partner's being a bad person. Both of you must have been, or one of you must have been, to get to that point. And when it's explained like you just did with your epic process, I think it's a good thing for blokes, because we've got the other side of men is that we're quite structured. You know, like you take it how disciplined you were at football training, how disciplined you were at work when it was a passion. You know, like when you first started your job at the automotive place.
Yeah.
Once we get that passion back in our belly, then a journey can be had. But, you know, definitely. Very good. So, we've gone a little bit over time here, but but it's one of those things, you know, like it's a great topic that you are helping guys with and everything like that. And I think, unfortunately, we're going to see a bit more, I think we might see a spike of separations and things like that, now that everybody sort of got over COVID and everything like that. But yeah,
Ongoing for a while yet.
Yeah, it's especially down there in Victoria. If you don't know, Victoria was the most locked down city in the world during COVID, and it was horrendous for the old Victorians. I was glad I was up in Queensland, even though it was bad up here, but we could still get around quite comfortably in our areas. You know, we didn't have 5 kilometre restrictions and things like that. But,
and you're actually talking about, like with the mental health care plans, they're actually talking about reducing the number of Medicare sessions that you can receive. So you think, talking about reducing it from 20 down to 10, because they raised it during the whole COVID situation. And there's a petition out at the moment, you know, against them dropping it back to 10 sessions per 12 months.
Yeah, well, what I'll do is I'll get that link off you when we finish the show, and I'll get it out there, because even though it was bad during COVID, it's got to be worse in the years to come. And it's not going to be just adults. It's the kids that are going to struggle. Now, on a positive note here, how do guys get in contact with you?
Yeah, so probably the best way would be through the business Facebook page at the moment. And so they can jump on there. I also have some different – I also have a private men's support group on Facebook as well called Next Level Brotherhood. Yep. So if anybody would like to jump on and join that, they're welcome. That's just more so a space, you know, for men to interact and chat yep. about what might be going on. And there's a lot of, you know, we all jump in there and help each other. So
yeah, beautiful. So I'll put them in the notes and everything like that. I'll get them all out there and make sure that they're there. But all I can say is keep going, buddy, because it's a real good purpose that you're doing. I thank you for taking time out of your precious day to be a part of the show. And if you're up to it, love to have you back on and talk a little bit more in depth about the process. We might get, you know, if it's okay with you, we'll discuss about that later on. But to really do a half an hour session on the process and give it a real good run for you to make sure that, you know, people can go in there with their eyes wide open and, you know, you can survive. That's the big
Absolutely.
Thing.
What we could do is we could do one on I think there's a lot of myths and confusion around counsellors versus psychologists.
Yep,
and we could also talk about what counselling actually is, and you know what it looks yep. like, because a lot of people have probably got a very clinical view of what counselling could be. So yep. it'd be good to clear up a few things there.
Beautiful. So once again, Marcus, thank you for being part of Out of the Caves show this week, and thank you very, very much.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Pete.
Pleasure.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/AcrossAmerica.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Left 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.